Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
According to the New York Times, special counsel Robert Mueller has subpoenaed the Trump Organization to turn over documents, indicating the investigation will likely last for several more months. Okay, look, I know you have to be thorough, but at this rate, by the time you're done, our only ally will be Luxembourg, Eric will be Secretary of State, and it'll be illegal for me to make jokes about any of it.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to actress and writer Lena Waithe, who then goes backstage at Studio AG to answer some extra questions just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump admitted in a private speech that he lied in a meeting with Canada's prime minister, an admission that comes amid major news in the Russia investigation and rumors of more staff turnover in the White House. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. President Trump met with the prime minister of Ireland today and reminisced about the time he used to spend at his golf resort there. But he offered a very weird answer when an Irish reporter asked if Trump ever planned on visiting the country again.
You gonna come visit us soon?
I will. I love it. I love it. I have property there, and I may never get to see it again.
Why does he think he'll never get to see it again? Is Robert Mueller gonna make him wear one of those ankle bracelets? I'd love to come, but halfway over the Atlantic, that thing starts buzzing like a son of a bitch. Trump was then asked if he played golf, a question he turned over to the prime minister.
Do you play golf?
I do play golf, and
you play golf, right?
I don't, but I'm always willing to learn, so you can take me for a few rounds.
A reporter asked Donald Trump, do you play golf? Where's that guy been? You get to ask the president one question. Oh, I got a good one. Oh, I got a real stumper for him. What were his other choices? Have you ever hosted a reality show? How about dating models? Have you ever tried that? I also love how Trump just assumes every head of state plays golf. You don't play? What do you do on Saturdays and Sundays? And Mondays? Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays? In a way, though, it was at least a relief to see Trump making nice with an ally, given his penchant for instigating pointless squabbles with some of our closest partners, like, for example, Canada. Today, audio surfaced of a fundraising speech Trump gave on Wednesday where he admitted to outright lying to Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau about the U.S.'s trade relationship with Canada.
At a fundraiser in St. Louis, President Trump seeming to admit he made up facts in a meeting with his Canadian counterpart, Justin Trudeau. NBC News has obtained an audio recording of those remarks from a Republican donor.
This guy, good-looking guy, comes in. Donald, we have no trade deficit. He's very proud because everybody else, you know, we're getting killed with it. So he's proud. I said, wrong, Justin, you do. I didn't even know. Josh, I had no idea. I just said you're wrong. You know why? Because we're so stupid.
In fairness, in fairness, I lied because I'm stupid is the truest thing Trump has ever said. Totally true. According to the Washington Post, Trump also made out of thin air a very bizarre story about how Japan supposedly uses gimmicks to keep U.S. cars from being sold in Japan. And even his own advisors have no idea what he's talking about. Here's the full quote from Trump. It's called the bowling ball test. Do you know what that is? That's where they take a bowling ball from 20 feet up in the air and drop it on the hood of the car. And if the hood dents, then the car doesn't qualify. Well, guess what? The roof dented a little bit, and they said, nope, this car doesn't qualify. It's horrible. The way we're treated, it's horrible. What are you talking about? Are you sure they didn't drop a bowling ball on your head? No dent. You should see the bowling ball. Trump's admission that he just makes stuff up comes amid an unprecedented level of turmoil in his White House. We've already seen a staggering number of staff departures, from Omarosa and Rob Porter to Chief Economic Advisor Gary Cohn, Communications Director Hope Hicks, and the president's personal assistant, John McEntee. The White House is turning into that crappy restaurant you worked at in college. Do you remember that? You'd, like, take 2 days off, and when you came back, there were four trainees and a new manager, and now there's moussaka on the menu, and you thought, this place isn't going to make it. Apparently, Trump's aggressive reshuffling of his team comes from a newfound confidence in his ability to do the job and make choices without the constraints placed on him by advisors. Amid rumors of even more staff departures coming soon, one former White House official told Vanity Fair, the president is finally realizing he is the president. He's just making these decisions on his own. And that is terrifying. That's like in Jurassic Park when the velociraptors figured out how to open doors. One day, John Kelly's going to be like, all right, I locked him in the Oval Office and put on Fox News. There's no way he can get out. Wait. What's that noise? Clever girl. Now, one of those decisions Trump has learned he can make on his own was his choice for chief economic advisor. In the past, that position has been held by academics and financial titans. But as usual, Trump went a different route. He chose a cable news pundit.
Another television personality is joining the Trump administration. The president has now selected CNBC commentator Larry Kudlow to lead his economic council.
He has been a senior contributor on CNBC with the television show.
So Trump is just filling his administration with people he sees on TV. I guess we should get ready for White House Chef Guy Fieri, Surgeon General McDreamy, and Secretary of Defense the General. But hey, just because someone's on TV doesn't mean he's an idiot, right? I mean, doesn't mean that, right? Maybe Larry Kudlow is a perceptive guy who knows a lot about financial markets and is good at predicting economic trends. Let's see what he had to say about the economy in December 2007, just as the Great Recession and one of the worst financial collapses in history was getting underway.
The tech sector is up 15%, and it does not look like a recession to me. For 2007 as a whole, we're looking at a 3.1% rate. That is so far, and it doesn't look like a recession at all.
So Trump just hired as chief economic advisor a guy who couldn't even recognize a recession when it was already happening. That's Kudlow's worst take since his live commentary on the flight of the Hindenburg.
Here comes the Hindenburg. Look at her fly and those beautiful flames. Such a nice touch. As everyone knows, the fire helps keep it in the air. What a well-designed aircraft. Looks like she's coming in for a landing. Go, the humanity!
Of course, all of this was touched off by the abrupt firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Trump's relationship with Tillerson has always been tense, but the low point was that infamous report that Tillerson had called Trump a moron behind his back. And Tillerson seemed to rub salt in the wound anytime he was asked about that report by going out of his way not to deny it, like in this 60 Minutes interview just last month.
Why didn't you deny calling the president a moron?
You know, that's a really old question.
Do you understand that by not answering the question, some people thought you were confirming the story?
I think I've answered the question.
You think you answered the question?
I've answered the question.
Did you call the president a moron?
I'm not going to dignify the question.
You may not be dignifying it, but you're definitely answering it. Interviewing Rex Tillerson is like having a conversation with a bullfrog. In fact, a bullfrog would probably be just as forthcoming.
Did you call the president a moron?
Of course, when he first nominated Tillerson, Trump pretended to be very excited about his Secretary of State, and now he's doing the same thing with his proposed replacement for Tillerson, CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Trump specifically praised Pompeo for having opinions that are very similar to his.
I've worked with Mike Pompeo now for quite some time. Tremendous energy, tremendous intellect. We're always on the same wavelength.
If Pompeo has tremendous energy and intellect, then you're not on the same wavelength. Because in regard to energy, you walk like you're dragging an IV stand with you. And in regard to intellect, this is how you spelled Marine Corps earlier this week. Also, I'm sorry, but I don't believe Trump even has a wavelength. Trump's inner thoughts probably sound like a FM radio station during a zombie apocalypse. If you could hear what he's thinking during meetings, it would sound like this.
They're working on it right now, the lawyers. Go ahead.
But we need to get started.
Help us! We're all alone!
So why does Trump like Pompeo so much? Well, for one thing, Pompeo has a record as a Trump loyalist and hardline conservative. He published his own Benghazi report when the Republican committee found no wrongdoing by Hillary Clinton. And during the campaign, he actually tweeted out links to hacked emails posted by WikiLeaks. He's also said that the intelligence agencies have concluded that Russian meddling did not affect the outcome of the 2016 campaign, when in fact, they found no such thing. And in one especially foreboding moment during his confirmation hearing, Pompeo was asked about Russian hacking, and this is true, out of nowhere, the feed just cut out.
As you know, Chairman Burr and I have committed to conduct a review of the intelligence supporting the Intelligence Committee's assessment that Russia, at the direction.
That happened. The feed just cut out right when they started talking about Russia. Who was the cameraman? Now, if Trump really is firing people he doesn't like, that's very troubling. There's already speculation that he might try to fire Mueller just as the Russia probe heats up. In fact, just this afternoon, we got more major news when the New York Times reported that Mueller has subpoenaed the Trump Organization to turn over documents, including some related to Russia. This investigation is so slow. It's like watching a porno in real time. All right, I ordered the pizza, now we wait. I think I speak for everyone when I say, just get to the good stuff and slap that baby on Trump's ankle already. This has been A Closer Look. Our guest is an actress and Emmy Award-winning writer. The season finale of her show, The Chi, airs Sunday night on Showtime. She also stars in the highly anticipated Steven Spielberg film, Ready Player One, which is in theaters and IMAX March 29th. Please welcome to the show, Lena Waithe, everyone. Michelle, Lena.
Thanks for having me, man.
I have so much to talk to you about, your show, your movie, but I also want to congratulate you. You got engaged.
I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I popped the question, man.
You popped the question Thanksgiving, is that right?
I did on Thanksgiving.
Gotcha.
I know it's kind of cheesy, but,
I think that's all right.
It has a special place in my heart, that holiday now.
I believe it.
Forever.
Yeah.
It was
and
good.
And you, so you bought a ring and everything?
Bought a ring.
Did you get a ring back?
No. Because that's the weird thing. You know, lesbian couples, you got the masculine, you got the feminine. So I was like, I don't want, like, a ring. That's, like, a little too feminine. So, like, give me some sneakers.
Oh, all right.
So she got me some. We were in Tokyo, and she got me some sneakers that you can only get in Tokyo. So I can literally be like, y'all ain't got these, man. You know? You got to go to Tokyo to get these
that's
joints.
That's great. You mentioned that you have a connection with Thanksgiving forever now. You wrote, won an Emmy for an episode of Master of None. You wrote, which was about your personal story of coming out.
Which is not fun for people, period. Coming out
the coming out story.
Fun, ever. But when you're far away from it, once you've done it, then you can make jokes and have fun and call Angela Bassett to come play a sweet version of your mother, you know, and have Kim Whitley play a nice auntie. You know, it's cool. But, like, during the time, it's, like, horrifying. It's, like, the worst.
And was it something that you... How did it come about that it became an episode of the show?
Well, honestly, like, Alan Yang, who was co-creator of Master of None, just asked me. He's like, how did you come out? And I literally did a one-woman show of the episode that you guys now know as Thanksgiving. And they were like, That's an episode. That's an episode of Master of None. I was like, really? I don't think it's that interesting. But they were like, no, you got to write it. We're going to get it done. And I was like, I got too much to do, man. I got to go do the Spielberg movie. I'm still trying to get The Shy green lit. And Aziz was just like, look, I can't write that by myself. That's a bad Aziz impersonation. I don't want to do him dirty and go up a couple... But he was like, yo, I can't write this by myself. He's like, this is like your story. I need you to help me tell it. And I'm so grateful that he made me do it because it changed
great.
My life.
It was a fantastic episode
Thank
of television.
You so much.
Congratulations.
Thank
so
you.
How? Because you then had to write it in London while you're working on Ready Player One. How was your Steven Spielberg? What's that like to be around Steven Spielberg?
Well, Steven Spielberg is the Jewish father you didn't know you needed.
Yeah, okay.
And he's amazing. Like, I always say he's a giant that doesn't make people feel small.
Uh-huh.
You know,
That's
he's
a great
like
way of
so
it,
cool. He lets you play. He lets you do your thing. And even when it's your fault, when you mess up a take, he don't make you think it's your fault.
Uh-huh.
He's like, that's my bad, camera guy. Bad camera guy. You messed up. He's like, now we got to do it again. Okay, Lena, I apologize. Like, he's so great. Like, he just always makes you feel right at home on a set.
I know it just premiered at South by Southwest. I know
it
people
did.
Loved it. Great response.
They dug it.
For those who don't know, what is the premise of the movie? Because I've heard it described as sort of a nerdgasm for all the pop culture references in this film.
Yes, that's a fair assessment. But it's also about, like, imagine social media times, like, 200. So it's like you can literally go to another planet and be what your avatar picture is. If you want to think you Tupac, you can go be Tupac, you know what I'm saying, and holler at Aaliyah. Like, it's really its own universe, and it's called The Oasis, and people get to be whoever they want in The Oasis, but what happens is this evil guy played by Ben Mendelsohn who wants to charge people to come to The Oasis. And the cool thing is about Ty's character, my character, Olivia's character, all of us, we want to keep The Oasis free and cool and a place people can chill. But it's also about being too caught up in escapism, which I think to me is a great metaphor because, you know, a lot of us are on social media more than we are involved in our own lives. And that's what, to me, is at the root of it. It's all about escapism is cool, but we got to appreciate real life, which is really nice.
And this is a film, obviously, huge special effects.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fantastic elements. And then
very
you're
expensive.
Also doing your show, The Shy, which is very grounded and sort of a beautiful show about Chicago and a kind of Chicago that we haven't seen depicted on television that much.
Yeah.
What was the thrust behind you wanting to do that show?
Well, I just feel like people were seeing black folks as just like people coming out the womb with a gun in one hand and a pile of cocaine in the other. And I was like, that's some people, I don't know, but not me and not everybody in Chicago. And I really wanted to humanize us and just show the community that the city has, because that's what I grew up, you know, feeling on the south side of Chicago. I really felt like I was a part of a village, and people looked out for me that weren't even related to me, and my grandmother had neighborhood watch meetings. They sort of policed themselves. It was all these great things, and I feel like that still exists today, and I wanted a little bit of that to come out with the show. Now, we still have, you know, some reality, you know, that we deal with on the show, but we really just show black folks just being and living, and I think that's kind of a bit of a revolutionary act right now, but we're happy to do it, and the season finale is this Sunday, and if you don't have Showtime, go to your cousin's house and watch it, because it's good.
I know you have absolutely.
Don't steal.
Don't steal. You have an issue. I was born in Evanston.
Yeah.
I have Chicago roots as well.
Yes, you do.
But you have a very strong feelings about New York pizza versus Chicago pizza.
This is true. I don't know why y'all call it pizza. It's actually cheese bread.
Okay, gotcha.
What y'all are doing. what we like to do is have layers.
Yeah.
You know, it's baked. You know what I mean? Like, you need a fork and a knife to get into it. You can't eat it standing on a corner. You would never want to buy a slice of it.
No.
You know, I don't know why one person would want one slice of pizza. That's very strange to me. So
you couldn't eat it on the street because it's so heavy.
No, you can't wouldn't eat it on the street. Why would you want to eat pizza on the street? Like, I'm, like, so confused by that. Like, it's like, what? Like, no, you got to sit down. There needs to be a plate involved, you know, and not a paper plate either, because if you get a paper plate, it's going to fall. It's too heavy. This is a hearty pizza. So when I came here, I was like, I don't know what this is. It's a snack for a fourth grader, but this is not what I like to call pizza, but y'all can do what you want.
You obviously, talking about your different projects, and, of course, Master of None as well, very different, and I've heard you say that you do want to explore different versions of yourself in your art, and you want to be a Kanye. You want to be like Kanye, someone else,
like
obviously,
Kanye.
With deep Chicago roots.
Exactly, and I think, you know, when you want to say you want to be Kanye, that could go a couple different ways.
Sure. You definitely need to, like, follow up, explain what you mean.
Here's what I'll say. Here's the dope thing about Kanye. Every album, you didn't know what Kanye you were going to get.
Yeah.
It was always different. It was always fresh, but it was always dope when you couldn't not talk about it. So for me, it's like everything from Master of None, The Shy, Ready Player One. I like to keep people guessing. And I think sometimes people want to put you in a box. I'm like, no, not this kid. Like, I'm going to keep messing with your mind. Next thing, I may do a Scorsese movie. I may be his AD. I don't know.
I don't know. He doesn't know, but I certainly am looking forward to finding out what the answer is. Hey, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks
for having me. Congratulations on everything. Great to meet you. Lead the way with everybody. Ready Player One is in theaters and IMAX March 29th from the season finale of The Shy, or Sundance Showtime.
Hey, this is Kevin from Late Night. We are backstage with Emmy Award-winning writer, actress, Lena Waithe. Lena, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You grew up in Chicago.
Yeah.
You created The Shy.
Yeah.
Season finale airs on Sunday.
Yes.
Picked up for a second season already.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what life was like for you growing up there and what inspired you to write the show?
Life was actually really great. You know, I feel like I grew up in a loving, warm, supportive community. And I think that's a part of Chicago people rarely see on television. I think they just kind of see there's like a jungle and a bunch of, you know, black guys just shooting each other. There's a lot more to it than that. And so I really, you know, want to really capture that in the show, is just how much of a community it feels like and how people really look out for each other and take care of each other. And I really just kind of want to show that humanity in the city. So, yeah.
I read that you knew that you wanted to be a television writer since you were a kid, like 7, 8 years old. You're very young. What were some of the shows that inspired you, and who were some of the TV writers that inspired you?
Well, A Different World had a major impact on me. I mean, my production company is called Hillman Grab Productions, which is the name of the fictitious HBCU they went to. And I would say, like, Susan Fells Hill, who was the showrunner of that show, Yvette Lee Bowser, who was right under her. Gina Prince Bythewood used to write on the show as well. So did Reggie Bythewood. All people that I know and I'm friendly with. It's funny, Yvette Lee Bowser is now the showrunner of Dear White People. I'm trying to get Susan Fells Hill to come help me co-showrun, hopefully, if TBS gives us a series order for 20s. Trying to grab her. Debbie Allen, who's also architect of A Different World, is now the producing director on Grey's Anatomy. And Gina Prince Bythewood obviously went on to do Love and Basketball. So it's just that show has not just a lot of meaning for me, but really launched a lot of careers that I really respect.
You used to work for Gina, and you have a story about... She asked you to do something that you had to be very resourceful for.
Yeah. This is like the first week of me working for her. And she just says, like, hey, can you get Whoopi Goldberg on the phone? And I go, okay, sure. And I'm like, if you want to throw me a number, like, who should I call? She's like, oh, I don't have any numbers for her. It's just like, I just need you to get her on the phone. So I then proceeded to call, like, ABC, because she was on The View at the time. Uh-huh. And they, like, obviously hung up on me when I asked Whoopi Goldberg. Then I finally got through to the actual show of The View. Got a security guard. They hung up on me as well. Then I called back again. I got a person who I believe is of the African-American persuasion. And I think he could tell I was like the real deal. And he cut me a break and said, look, I can't put you through to her, but I know a person that works with her. His name is Tom. I'll get you his information. So I called Tom, told Tom who I was, worked for Gina. He's like, let me call you back. So I sat there and it felt like an eternity. But finally the phone rang. He said, hey, okay, I have Whoopi for Gina. I said, well, I got Gina over here. We connected them, and the rest is history.
How much did you learn working under great writers like that?
I worked for Mara, Gina, and Ava DuVernay. I worked on Ava's first film. I think to me, it's like I just really, you take notes in terms of how they, you know, navigate the business, how they move in the industry. And I think it is different for a black woman, you know, in terms of how you handle yourself and how you, you know, deal with the politics of the business. So I really just took notes on my own. It's so funny because people always say, oh, I want a mentor. I want to be mentored. But I'm like, mentors are everywhere. They may not know they're your mentor. But if you just pay attention and take notes and be mindful, then anybody can be your mentor, honestly. Yeah.
And what do people ask you about in terms of advice? Young writers and performers, do they come to you for advice? And what do you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, the big question I always get is, what is it like to be a gay black woman, you know, trying to be in the business? And I always tell them, I'm like, none of that stuff matters if you have a great script. Mm-hmm. If you have really dope material or if you're really talented at what you do, people want to be in business with you. And I think it's kind of jarring to them because I think a lot of times we become so used to being discriminated against that we just don't know how to be. If you say, well, no, you have a great script, and the truth is some people may disagree with me and say, but the business isn't fair, and sometimes you have a good script. That's true, but if you're really talented And all you need is exposure. There are places like the Blacklist site where you can go to, which is BLCKLST. It's the Blacklist with no vowels.com. Put your script up there. If you get a high score, there's a chance that somebody's going to reach out to you and say, hey, I want to read this, or hey, I read it. Who are you rep by? Where do you live? All that kind of stuff. So I think if it's just about exposure nowadays, it's easier to get that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people want exposure before they have the craft sort of figured out. So I always try to teach people to be really great at what they're trying to do, and then the rest will take care of itself.
And you were a screenwriting major in college?
I actually majored in writing and producing and television, which was really great. Gotcha. That Columbia offered, that very few places do, because most people think about film, but Columbia was really great and kind of welcomed us TV kids. Mm-hmm. Even though I dabbled in film, I produced Dear White People and produced another movie called Stepsisters, which is on Netflix, but I really am I'm a TV kid, and I'm grateful that they taught me how to do it. And I think it's one of the reasons why I have a leg up, you know, or had a leg up in the business.
And you went through a lot of writing and rewriting, and that was taught to you during that time. It's okay to make mistakes, and, oh, yeah, and things aren't always going to be great on the first try.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing that everybody should have. Very few people do. A lot of people write something and want to, you know, go to, you know, the Oscars. But I think it's about, that's how you learn to become a good writer, through that process, like doing rewrites, getting feedback, taking, sometimes you take a bad note and you go, oh, I don't like where my script is now. But then it's like, but then that annoying work of going back, undoing that note, and then realizing, okay, this is why that wasn't a good note, because it actually changed the DNA of my story. And unless the DNA of your story needs to be changed, that's not the kind of note you need to take. But that just all comes with practice and just doing it a lot.
How long ago did you come up with the idea for The Chi?
Oh, that was about maybe 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's been in the works for a while.
Yeah.
Great. And Common is executive producing also.
Yeah, he's executive producer on it. Him and his team. And obviously he popped up in season one too.
Well, it's great. Lena, congratulations on everything. And
Thank you so much.
The movie comes out, Ready Player One, March 29th.
Classic Spielberg.
Lena, thanks so much for taking some time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.